Good morning, everybody. Good morning. Good morning. The shiur this morning is dedicated to the memory of Martha Berliner, Miriam Bat Menachem Aleha Shalom, her Yahrzeit was Chof Gimel Kislev 10 years ago, the mother and mother-in-law of Chana and Shmuel Treisman, and we will learn today L'Iluy Nishmata. I believe I knew her, I remember her, and Chof Gimel Kislev, that's going to be on... Today is Chof Aleph. I think today is Chof Aleph, so that'll be on Thursday.
Thursday.
I just want to make a very, very important disclaimer at the beginning of this year. The topic of this year is going to be a painful, complex. Don't under any circumstances attempt to extrapolate from the shiur any kind of halachic position whatsoever. In advance, I make it very clear, you cannot walk out of this shiur and say, Rabbi Gold Paskin such and such. I'm not Paskining. It's too painful, I say, to Paskin. Far too complex, and I want to explain to you the complexity of it all. So you're wondering, what halachic question am I going to deal with? Gilad Shalit. Gilad Shalit. Is it permitted to free 1,000 terrorists, many of them with blood on their hands, whom we are certain beyond any shadow of a doubt are going to go back to terrorist activity? Loyalenu, Jews are going to be killed. There's no doubt it happened in the last two times we did it. Iskat Jibril for over 1,000. And there are people, families in Eretz Yisrael today. I shudder to think when and if this will ever go through, that you'll see pictures of the killers being freed and they're getting onto the buses, V for victory, and families that guy with the V for victory that he killed, how are they going to be able to look at it? That's only one part of the complexity. Because take a look, at the same time, we also have to be able to look Gilad's parents in the face and say, no, we're not going to rescue your son. It's unbelievable. This is a dilemma. You know what you need? You need Chokhmah Shlomo HaMelech. And you know what I think Shlomo HaMelech would say about this Shaila? Omarti echkomo v'hi rechokam mimeni. I thought that I was wise, and this is too distant for me. Too difficult. Incidentally, I had this feeling every so often that when in the last 2 weeks, we were hearing about there are intensive negotiations. The guy from Germany is going to Damascus. The guy from Damascus is going to Cairo. Both of them can go, you know where. And everybody. And you know what it is? It's all to raise the anticipation, and then give us all another psychological blast. They are playing with us, and they've done this all the time. They're playing a very, very serious, dangerous game, and they're getting away with it.
all that I want to do is, I want to give you at least the basic sources with which people of halacha are dealing with this question and have forever dealt with it. And then we're going to have to see, does it really fit the position in which we find ourselves now? I want to begin with a question. How many captive hostage situations do we have in Torah? And how are they resolved? I'm going to take this chance of letting people answer. God, let's go. Let's hear. Yes, Reuven Ben Chaim.
One. Well, during the 40 years of wandering in the desert, the king of
please stop right here. Because what you've just now done is the one that I was certain nobody in the room would get. The one that was the last one on my list. You get up over there and you have it first. I want them to hear the rest. Don't hear the rest. Is it possible you daven in Rabbi Gold's shul? Alright, you know what? I'm going to rephrase the question. How many hostage situations do we have in Sefer Bereishis? Now you're out of the box, right? Okay. How many hostage situations do we have in Sefer Bereishis? Let's go.
One.
No, good. Now you're wrong. Only one? Okay. Alright, so now you went to I think. Alright. Are you ready to say that there are no others except the one you're thinking of right now?
I'm not sure.
You're not sure? Okay. So let's give other people. What happened to you? In Sefer Bereishis. I'm Katakti at Zelzer. Yosef, okay, you said it. Zerach and Shon, he's the first one. Lot. Who? Lot. Yes. Lot. Vayavo Hapolit, the one who fled from the field of battle before mighty superpowers of the day had captured Lot. Lot. There's one before Lot. There's what?
Sarah.
That's before Lot. And you know what? There's another Sarah after Lot. Sarah is taken to the house of Paro against her will. She's a hostage in the house of Paro. Sarah is taken to the house of Abimelech and she's held hostage up there. Right. So we already have. In Parshat Lech Lecha alone, we have three hostage situations. Sarah, Lot, Sarah. Alright? Next. What happens in each one of those situations? In the two Sarah situations, God brings suffering and punishment upon the respective homes of Paro and Abimelech. And what happens by Lot? Avram, without hesitation, gathers his major army of 318 men and he rides out in order to rescue Lot, and he does. Gevura Gedola, great might. Yes.
Can you say that Avram gave in because he let Sarah be taken
without fighting? I dealt with that last week. We dealt with it last week. Certainly in Mitzrayim, we said because it was Chutz Laretz, and he wasn't the great Avram who's able to ride out. And by Abimelech, we have to find other reasons, but we'll save that. Okay? Next, what's the next hostage situation?
Dina.
Alright, so what happened? That's last week's sermon. What happens with Dina? Along go Shimon and Levi, and they wipe out the city of Shechem. By the way, is it because Shimon and Levi alone could do it or planned on doing it? No, according to the Rambam, the city of Shechem, they were all chayiv misa, they all deserved the death penalty because they harbored and they protected somebody who had kidnapped, and therefore they all are equally guilty. And it was just that Shimon and Levi were the ones that took this upon themselves, but the rest of them would have joined in this struggle. Okay? Any more?
Who?
Shimon. When they come to Yosef in next week's Seder, so first of all, for 3 days, he takes all of the brothers, all 10 of them are placed in jail. After 3 days he says, I'm releasing you because Elokim ani yarei, I fear God. And then he made the deal with them that he'll send them home. They have to bring their little brother, but he keeps Shimon. Shimon remains a hostage in the house of Tzafnat Paner until they return the next time around. Then of course there is the attempted incarceration of Binyamin, which of course ends up with Yosef revealing himself. And of course we did mention Yosef himself. Yosef is imprisoned twice, and even in the house of Potiphar, he's enslaved. I think that we've covered all of the hostage situations in Sefer Bereshis. What Reuven over there, back there, was trying to jump the gun was the one that I assumed was unknown, but I made a mistake. It wasn't unknown. Reuven, you knew. That's on side 2. Mistake. Number 5 on side 1. After Aaron HaKohen dies, this is in Parshas Chukas, Vayishma HaKnani Melech Arad, the Knani, the king of Arad, heard what? That Aaron had died, and it seems that the clouds of glory had disappeared and Israel were revealed. In a sense, they were not protected. Melech Arad Yosef HaNegev Kibo Yisrael Derech HaTarim Vayilachem B'Yisrael Vayish B'Mimenu Shevi. He waged war with Israel. Rashi says this was Amalek. Amalek is the one who lives in the south. Vayish Mimenu Shevi Vayid. What's the response? They took a captive. Rashi down at the bottom, number 6, last line, Vayish Mimenu Shevi, and captured a captive from it, Eino Elo Shivcha Achas. The English translation is a little grating. It's a little grating. It was nothing but a single slave woman. The only reason why I feel that I can begin to accept this, you know, we're talking about a human being. We're talking about a human being who's a member of the Jewish camp in the desert. I mean, it was nothing but bad English. But then again, let's assume that it's nothing but a slave woman. Nothing but a slave woman! And take a look how Klal Yisrael reacts! Vayidar Yisrael Nedal Hashem, Israel, all of Israel made a vow to Hashem. Vayomer said, and they say it's in singular, it's all the people as one, in Naton Titein et Ha'am Hazeh Biadi, if God, if you will give these people into my hand, Vahacharamti et Orehem, I will consecrate their cities. If you want to, it's okay with me. If you translate it, I will destroy their cities. Do you understand? All of Israel stands up like one in order to rescue this nothing but a slave woman. That tells you something about how Kansel feels about this. Vayikrosh. All right, so it says, Vayishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael. I love that pasuk. I love this pasuk. We once explained the Malbim says there's a difference between b'kol and l'kol.
Bikol always means listening precisely to exactly what was said and following those instructions. For example, Kol Asher Tomam Elecha Sora Shema Bikolak. When Sora wants Yishmael to be sent away and Avram is very upset, the Rashi makes it clear whatever Sora says, Shema, listen, Bikola. In Parshat Yitro, when Yitro comes and gives all sort of advice, good advice, to his son-in-law, that he can't do it alone. You can't judge the people alone. What you have to do is you have to set up a system of courts and judges and officers of the court. So it says, Vayishma Moshe Likol Chotno. Moshe listened to the voice of his father-in-law. In other words, he did not do precisely what his father-in-law had suggested, but he got the idea, and then he gave the idea his own form and did it in his own way. When it says, Vayishma Hashem Bekol Yisrael, it's an God listens. Klal Yisrael has spoken. God acts. Vayitein et haknani, vayacharein etem vetoreim, vayikroshem hamokom chorma. He gave the knani over into their hands. Okay. Quite a reaction of Klal Yisrael when one of their own. This nothing but a slave woman is one of their own. There are other examples in Tanakh, but you know that would take a great deal of time. There's a point in Shmuel, that I believe, where the Kanani Amalek raids, they raid David's camp while David is away, and they walk off with all the women, the children, and all of their possessions, everything, kol ha'rechush. And then when he and his men return to the camp, there were 400 people, they return to the camp and they find that everything has been taken. They are overwhelmed with such dejection and depression, they cry, and David says, let's go, and boy did they go out. They catch up with them, they crush the enemy, and they rescue all of the hostages. Fast forward 3,500 years, July 4th 1976. What happened on July 4th, 1976? Entebbe. 2,500 miles across Africa. That's the way Klal Yisrael responds. Am I saying that this can be the response here? Okay, the circumstances are so different. So let's begin to see, how does the halacha look at it? Okay, let's begin with number one. This is a Mishnah. The Mishnah lists their whole series of Mishnayot there in Masechet Gittin, where the Mishnah lists enactments of the rabbis, things that were enacted by the rabbis in order to for tikkun ha'olam, for the, you know, that's a term you have to watch today. The reform, the conservative, the small, they're all out for tikkun ha'olam. Or if you're not a tikkun ha'olam person, you're nothing. And tikkun ha'olam usually means, of course, the rights of the subjugated and downtrodden Palestinians. That's the first rights in the world. there should be less rights, but those are the first rights in the world. All right. Let's see what the Mishnah says. Ein podin et hashvuyin yeter al kedei demeyen. This was the operative halacha throughout time. Ein podin et hashvuyin yeter al kedei demeyen. One may not ransom captives for more than their value. Mipnei tikun ha'olam. This prohibition was enacted, so they're not really they're not translating it literally. Tikun ha'olam means fixing the world, or you know, fixing doesn't sound so good. You know, give me a better word.
Repairing
the world. I like that. That's right. Yeah, my plumber makes tikkunim. You understand? And my nagar, fixing or improving the world. The second half of the Mishnah does not interest us now. So let's go to the Gemara. Why? Why did our rabbis enact that you don't pay an exorbitant sum or more than the value, so to speak, of the captive? The Mishnah taught that captives should not be ransomed for more than their value for the benefit of society. The Gemara seeks to define what the benefit is in this case. What's the benefit of Chachamim telling us don't pay too much to get a captive back? Iboilu, they ask, Haim ipnei tikkun ha'olam. This tikkun ha'olam, what is it? Two possibilities. Mishum duchke d'tzivurahu. Does it mean that this prohibition was enacted for the sake of avoiding a burden on the community? Duchke d'tzivurah. It will cause a sense of oppression. The tzivur will be oppressed. Who has to pay? We have to pay, right? Okay. Now, if we pay more than one is worth, they will be, you know, then they'll do it again and again. Mishum duchka d'tzibura. Does it mean that this prohibition was enacted for the sake of avoiding the burden on the community? That is, the community should not be impoverished by having to ransom captives. Oh, Dilma, maybe the reason that this was enacted, Mishum de lo ligrivu the license fail, or perhaps it means that the prohibition was enacted so that idolaters will not be encouraged to capture more people and bring them to ransom. Now, you may wonder, what's really the difference between the two? What's the difference between the two sides over here? The one is so that the community should not be impoverished. What does that mean? That, you know, they may take more and more, and we're going to have to ransom more and more. And what's the second possibility? The second possibility is that we should not give the goyim out there the appetite, whet their appetite to take more captives. So of course, one of the differences, we'll see right away. We'll see. So the Gemara says, Toshima. Toshima means come and hear, and we're going to see, come and learn from the following incident. The Levi Bar Garga, Parka Librate Betlesen Alfe Dinrezov. Levi, the son of Darga, ransomed his daughter for 13,000 golden dinars without drawing upon communal funds. In other words, what happens if I'm not going to cast the burden, the financial burden, upon the community? I can pay myself. So if the reason why we don't pay more than is would be the going rate, so to speak, for captives, is so as not to impoverish the community, what happens if this particular situation is one which will not fall upon the community? They're not going to be impoverished. I'm going to pay for my own daughter. Then under those circumstances, Levi Bar Darga was permitted. He had the right to go ahead and ransom his daughter. This proves that the prohibition was enacted to prevent the financial burden on the community. If the reason for the prohibition was to deter further abductions,
If that would have been the reason, so there shouldn't be more abductions, then we, Levi Bar Dago would not be permitted to ransom his daughter even from his own money. The fact that you're ransoming her already with a large sum of money is going to whet their appetite even more. This, if the reason for the prohibition was to deter further abductions, Levi would not have been allowed to ransom his daughter for an exorbitant price even without community funds. Amar Abaye, so Abaye says, you want to prove that the halacha is like one side of this question from Levi Bar Dago. So Abaye says, Umam leim alon de beritzon chachamim avid. Dilma shalom beritzon chachamim avid. How do you know that Levi Bar Dago asked the permission of Chachmei Yisrael to ransom his daughter? Maybe Levi Bar Dago, on his own, went ahead, made a deal with the abductors, paid them a huge sum of money, and he got his daughter back. You know what that means? What it means, therefore, is the Gemara has not taken a position. The Gemara has not made a decision in this case. Which one is it? Is it so that the tzibur should not be impoverished? Or should it be so that they shouldn't come and abduct more people? Every discussion of ransom begins with this Mishnah, with this halacha, and these few lines of Gemara. Now, that's in Masechta Gittin. There's another Gemara in Masechta Gittin, number two. I think it's a famous story. Maaseh Rabbi Yeshua ben Hanani Shaholach Lekram Godel Shabaromi. The story is told of Rabbi Yeshua, the son of Hananiah, who went to a great city in Rome. Omlo, they said to him, Tinok Echod Yesh Debeit HaSurim, there is a child. There is a child imprisoned here, Yefei Einayim V'Tov Roi, beautiful eyes and a fine appearance, Ukrutzotav Sidurot Lo Tal Talim, and his locks are arranged in curls. He went and he stood by the entrance to this jail. Amar, and he recited out loud the following verse in Tanakh. It's in Yeshayahu. Mi nakan l'mishisa Yaakov v'Yisrael l'pozim. Who has given Jacob over for spoil and Israel to plunder? Who has given Klal Yisrael over into the hands of the enemy that they should be able to rob and plunder us? Ono sotina, that boy answered, he heard a voice coming from the prison, v'amar, and the boy said, Halo Hashem zuchotanu lo. This, behold, this is God to whom we sin. V'lo ovu b'drochav halokha, and they did not want to go in his ways. V'lo shomu b'torato, and they didn't listen to his Torah. This happens to be the second half of the pasuk that Rabbi Yehoshua said. Minatan l'mishisa Yaakov v'Yisrael l'poses him. And the child responds in two ways. He's quoting the second part of the pasuk, and he's saying that's the answer to the question of the first. God, to whom we sinned, and we didn't do his Torah. So the Gemara goes on to say, Amar, Rabbi Yeshua said, Muftachani bo shemora harob Yisrael, I'm certain that he's going to be a render of legal decisions in Israel. He's going to be a gadol b'Yisrael. Ha'avoda, I swear, she'ini zoz mikan, that I won't walk from the spot, until I redeem him with any amount of money they will ask of me. Any amount of money. That is not in keeping with the Mishnah that we long learned, that ein podin et hashivuyim yeter al kedei demeim, you don't pay more than whatever the going rate is for ransom. Amru, they said, lo zoz mishon, he didn't move from the spot, akshet pedo b'momon harbe, he indeed redeemed him with a large sum of money, lo hoyu yomim lo otim ad shahora harob Yisrael, and sort of relatively speaking, it was a brief period afterwards that he became a great, this child became a great Talmud Chacham. Umanu, who was that?
Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha. Rabbi Yishmael ben Elisha was one of the great, great Tanoim. What we get on this Gemara is there's an exception to what seemed to be the ironclad ruling of the Mishnah. The Mishnah said, "Ein paldin hashvuyim, you don't redeem captives for more than their money." But all of a sudden, we find, wait a minute, in the case of Tam Chacham. Well, and you have to understand, I believe this was a period of time in which there most probably were thousands upon thousands of Jewish captives in Rome. Rome led the captive, homeless thy head. Rome took Jewish captives and brought them to Rome. See, it was already, that one thing was certain, there was no way that Klal Yisrael would ever be able to redeem all of the slaves that Rome had taken, all of their captives. But it's a, this is an exception to the rule. There's another exception to the rule in the Sechta Ksuvas. A husband has an obligation, a contractual ksuva obligation, to redeem his wife for whatever sum he is capable of giving, even if it's beyond what she would be worth sort of on the slave market. There's another exception. You know, the other exception is a captive who redeems himself. He's not bound by the law of more than whatever number. Me, I can redeem me for all the money in the world. You can't place a limitation. You can't place a limitation on a person redeeming himself. By the way, there are some who say that that is the reasoning why one has to redeem his wife for whatever exorbitant sum. Because ishto kegufo, a man's wife is like him. It's redeeming himself. All right. Now we're going to move one step further past the Mishnah. We've really begun with Torah, did a little bit in the Nevi'im, we took the Mishnah, the Gemara, now we're going to start going to the Halacha, the Rambam. Number three, this is an exceptional Rambam, like everyone is, but this is more exceptional. Pidyon Shvuyim, the redemption of captives, Kodim Leparnosas Aniyim V'lechsusam. It is even more important than feeding the poor or clothing them. Ve'ein l'chom mitzvah gedolah k'pidyon shvuyim. There is no mitzvah as great as redeeming captives. Sha'ashovui, listen to how he describes it. He's going to describe what captivity means. Shavui, the one who is a captive, Hadeu Bichlau, he is already considered Horeivim, the hungry, Vatsumeim, and the thirsty, Vaharumim, and the naked, Vaomi, the Sakonis, and the Boshis. Every moment of his captivity, his life is in danger. His life is in danger. Because you never can tell the moment at which the one who's holding will decide to be done with him completely. He's, what a description. So therefore he's really saying that by pidyon shvuyim, you're doing all this, you're feeding the hungry, you're giving to drink to the thirsty, you are clothing the naked, the mother, you're saving the life. You're saving the life. The Hamalim Einav Mipijono, and anybody who turns aside his eyes, doesn't pay attention to the mitzvah Pidyon Shvuyim, listen to this. Hareze Over, he transgresses, and the Rambam is going to list a whole bunch of transgressions. Really, I don't think there's another Rambam like this. Hareze Over, he transgresses, number one. Pasuk in Devarim, lo ta'ameit zed levavko, don't harden your heart, lo tikpot zed yadcha, and don't close your hands. Your heart has to be open, and your hands have to be open to give. Va'al, another aveda, lo tam l'bal tam re'echa, you're not permitted to stand idly by when the blood of your friend, the blood of a fellow Jew is in danger. It says about somebody who has slaves, you should not permit him to work the slave with avodas pera, back-breaking work, leinecha. You see it. You know what's happening over there. You can't watch and do nothing. And he also has set aside and has not fulfilled the mitzvah. Open up your hand to him and give whatever you can in order to save him. And you're over the mitzvah of the chayachicha imach, your brother shall live with you. You are over under your heart to love your friend like yourself. And you are over also, Pasuk, this is already in Mishlei, but that's also significant. Hatzel lekuchim lamavet. Save those, you have an obligation to save those who are being taken to their death. Zahar ve'drachim ke'elu. The Rambam is saying that there are many, many more psukim that he can muster over here in order to make it clear that there is no mitzvah like the mitzvah of pidyon shvuyim. Ve'ein lecha mitzvah rabba kepidyon shvuyim. He began the halacha by saying "Ein lecha mitzvah gedola kepidyon shvuyim," and he ends the halacha by saying "Ein lecha mitzvah rabba," a major mitzvah like pidyon shvuyim. Yes.
But all of the redemption seems to be to imply that it's a question of money.
I'll tell you what she said. You know, you people are. Thank God. I spend a lot of time preparing this year. Otherwise I would be bowled over. And I'll tell you, sometimes you don't even have to prepare a shiur. Sometimes all you have to do is read the newspaper. And I'll explain.
What was the question?
Annette, that's exactly what I'm coming to, you're right. Annette is, but you know, all this psukim, everything here, you're not completely right, but I'm going to let you get away with it. She says, all of this seems to be talking about a matter of money. Money, money, money. In other words, she's saying, this is not the dilemma that has been faced by the state of Israel. The dilemma faced by the state of Israel, Jews were not faced in 2,000 years in the exile. They weren't being asked to give up the Golan for captives. They're being asked something completely different. They're being asked to free killers, hands dripping with blood. Klal Yisrael in the Golan never experienced this kind of a question. So thank God I did take out a few minutes to read a newspaper on Shabbos. There was a very, very incisive and fine halachic article on the Gilad Shalit case by Rav Yisrael Rosen, who is the head of Tzomet, the ones that make real kosher Shabbos elevators and all these others. He's a big Talmud Chacham, and he's bright. And his whole thesis is one. He took it from Annette. All the discussion in halacha, take 2,000 years of halacha, go back to the Mishnah. The talk of ransoming was only money. You won't find anything else. No source. What he's really saying is, you can't really muster much from the whole halacha. You know, it's sort of like I'm going to be ending the shiur mid-shiur, but it's okay, I have a lot more to say. He says all of this that has been quoted in every article, every halachic article that deals with ransoming begins with the Mishnah Ein Poldinat Ashbuyim Yeter Ankidei Demeyem Lemani. He says all of them are irrelevant to the issue at hand, because all of them are talking about giving money. Is it that Chazal never anticipated this possibility? I'm not ready to accept that. I think Chazal anticipated it . But they saw the dilemma as being so severe and so complex and so difficult to decide that they have to leave it up to the decision of the people living at the particular time. There are too many variables. There are too many possibilities. There are too many all sorts of fallout from it. Now, I have difficulty saying what I just now said. Am I saying that Chazal couldn't give us guidance in this matter? I don't know. I can't say that. I'm not ready to go as far as Rabbi Rosen goes. But that it's true that every discussion of captives was all about money. It was all about money. Every case in the door is about money. How much money? Which means we're left with a serious, serious dilemma. But wait a minute, there's nothing more to say. This shear is far from over. Yes, Malka? This is 3 for 3. 3 for 3. Reuven ben Chayin comes up with Parshas Chukas, Annette asks about it's only money, and along comes Malkin and says, what about Maharam Mirutenberg? Now, what is she talking about? Now it's sure already that this shiur is going to have to go into extra innings. There's a famous story of the Maharam Mirutenberg that was in the end of the 13th century. Maharam, Rav Meir of Rutenberg, was the Gadol b'Yisrael in the Germany, Alsace, Lorraine, and he was taken captive. And the Jewish community, this is how the story goes, the Jewish community was ready to pay, I think it was 20,000 golden, whatever it was at the time, an awesome, exorbitant sum of money. And as the story goes, the Maharam Rutenberg said, don't pay a penny, I'm not coming out of prison. He refused to allow himself to be redeemed. He was imprisoned for 7 years. He died in prison. And then 14 years later, there was a Jew from Frankfurt who went ahead and indeed ransomed his body for an awesome sum of money on condition that he be buried next to the Maharam Mirutenberg. And he is indeed buried next to him. Two of them are there. Now, the Maharam Mirutenberg story is in fact used in Halacha. Here I have an article by Rav Shaul Yisraeli, and Rav Shaul Yisraeli in a footnote just writes the following, like it's so simple. HaMaharam Mirutenberg Nohar. The Maharam Mirutenberg conducted himself kiyodua, as is well known, kacha al atzmo. That's how he conducted himself about himself. You can't ransom me, and he complained bitterly about his imprisonment. He didn't have svarim, he couldn't write. It was not a good imprisonment. Not what the Palestinians prisoners get in Israel. Far, far from that. It was Gilad Shalit, just one. V'ho yosheva shonim v'masa v'nifter betfisa
and he did not permit that he should be ransomed. This is brought by the Maharshal, Rav Shlomo Luria, about 300 years after the death of the Maharam in Wittenberg. He brings it in a sefer, his sefer, Yam Shel Shlomo, in the fourth parak of Gidui LePerek here. Yes?
There's another issue that was raised to me by a religious colonel in the army.
Yes?
He said, by releasing the terrorists, they're very bad for morale. How did they get the terrorists? How did they capture them?
All right.
They don't rip their lives and even give their lives by going to Shkab or Jenin or wherever. And by releasing them, soldiers will say, why should I release, why should I risk my life or give my life if they can only give them away again and put them in circulation again?
That's number four. I quoted a footnote from Rav Shaul Yisraeli's article. In the body of the article, Rav Shaul Yisraeli makes the following case, that there is an unwritten agreement between the state of Israel and every soldier, that we will do everything in our power to get you back. And that contract, call it the social contract, between the army and the soldier is something that cannot be broken, because God forbid if it's broken, that might demoralize the army. Refusing to obey orders will only make the army stronger. Okay, that was just a commercial in the middle. Had absolutely nothing to do with the whole shit. All right. But Rav Shlomo Yisraeli said that this is an unwritten contract. And that unwritten contract has the power of halakha. And the reason why there is this unwritten contract is exactly as you said, because a soldier's morale is going to be deeply, deeply hurt. By the way, there's another way to look at it. Complete opposite way to look at it. A soldier who goes into the army understands in advance he may be wounded, he may be killed, and he may be captured. That's it. And what? Should you be caught, the commissioner is going to disavow any knowledge of you. What was that, a Mission Impossible? You send a spy out into the cold. You get no backup. That's also a contract, which is precisely the opposite of the contract that that Rav Shlomo Yisraeli is talking about. Yes?
So what if the soldier is a female? Does that also apply to her as well as the captive, if she's taken captive?
If it's a female soldier? I think you've been fighting for equality all these years. You're equal. When she goes into the army, she is undertaking the same responsibilities that that somebody else takes away. I don't think there's any difference between the two. Yes?
You're saying about the contract that the army says, you know, we will do everything possible to get you out. But it doesn't say that we're going to take you, or it doesn't say we're going to exchange you for other prisoners.
So Rav Shaul Yisraeli is saying, yeah, it may mean that we pay, you have to pay more than is necessary. But what complicates it over here is, by freeing terrorists, we are endangering other lives. And there's no way to get out of it. There's no easy way over here. Wait, yes?
I think they covered that, even if it was only for money, when they said it's a burden on the community, and it encourages more kidnappings that have to do with everything. Nothing.
But it still only says the mayhem, money. It's only talking about money. And that is right in that. Yes?
What some of the problems are, he likes to use the word prisoner of war. He's not just the captive, he's not just the hostage, he's a prisoner of war. And the enemy is using this to divide us, to actually cause us a lot of pain in the whole process. Also, the problem is there are precedents for the release of terrorists. That's another point. But this is not a test case or a new situation. The problem is it's been done in the past. So we now have a situation of A, what is the value, and
what is the danger to the whole society? And that's the problem. And another thing is, we as a community are not even being part of this process. We're not even asked for it. So we can, whatever we decide, the government officials have in their own way.
Ken, you have said so much now. I don't know how I can respond to all of that, but I'll tell you one thing. I'm very happy that they're not asking me. I don't know what to answer. I don't know what to answer. And that, yes, the fact that it was done before only intensifies the pressure. As somebody said, I think it was Esther Waxman, in an article in the Jerusalem Post, how painful it is, like sort of getting back home and we'll start all over again. We can't deal with all of this. Yes, we did it before, we'll do it again. You get only one in this year. You get only one opportunity. Alright, but I see you're beginning to sense. I still have to get back to the Magami Rutenberg. The reason why I have to get back to the Magami Rutenberg, because here a great deal has been written lately, leaving the impression that that story may not be true.
Oikevout!
It may not be true. And if the story of the Magami Rutenberg is not true, that cannot be used as a basis for a halakha. Somebody who wrote about it recently said he doesn't understand. We have the gravestone is there, the gravestone of the Maharam, and it tells you the year in which he was arrested. It tells you the year in which he died. It tells you the year in which his body was ransomed, and the great heroism of the Maharam in Rutenberg doesn't appear on the on his gravestone. Who would have left that out from his gravestone? You know who would have left it out? If it never happened. If it never happened. In a sense, it was a matter that the death of the Marami Rutenberg in prison was a great failure of the Jewish community. Because there are others who say his great student was Rabbeinu Osher ben Yechiel, the Rosh. And the Rosh, soon after the Marami Rutenberg died in prison, the Rosh fled Germany, and of all things, I think he made his way to Toledo in Spain. He became the great Ashkenazi Gadol Yisrael of the Sephardic community of Spain. You understand? It was unbelievable. He had to flee because they were going after him to arrest him as well. And according to some of the historians, or many of the historians, he was the one who was in charge of raising the money in order to redeem the Marami Rutenberg.
As to the claim that this is a myth, so is our claim to Har Habayit a myth. I mean, if you want deniers, you deny them.
But the deniers have a pretty good point when they say the greatest act of the Marami does not appear on his gravestone, and all the other details are there, but it's not. That shakes me a little bit. In any conversation that you'll have about the Pidyon Shvuyim, the Maharam rises immediately. I'm not taking a position yet. I'm not taking a position about anything. We're going to learn another Rambam. And this is a position that's taken by another one of the Poskim. Number four. I'm sorry, this year is going into extra innings. Especially since there's, you know what the end of the year is going to be? The brothers of Yosef didn't know the Rambam that says a captive is like one who is hungry, thirsty, naked, and his life is in constant danger. And they put him into that position.
There has to be more to the story of Mechiras Yosef. They didn't know that they're over and lo samar al dam diecha lo girdenu beforech eilu mevatel the mitzvah pasach tiftach es yadcha the mitzvah v'cheyach yichelimach the mitzvah v'hachdor yach kamalcha hatzei lukuchim amad. They trampled it all. Is that this what I'm supposed to believe? I'm having difficulty with this. By next week, maybe I won't have that much difficulty. But we have to find a way to understand this. What are you talking about? The brothers turned Yosef into Gilad Shalit. That's what they did. This is a very serious question. I, for one, am not ready to believe that at all. There has to be another way to understand it. One more Rambam. And if I go in tax meetings, you'll have to ask your questions next week. Or come ready, prepared with them in advance on little ptakim. Or tishluchu SMS. Or fax. Okay? Number four. The Rambam says, oh, by the way, Rav Rosen, who says that all the talk is only about money, gives one extremely significant proof. The halacha of pidyon shvuyim, this great Rambam that we learned, appears in Hilchos Tzedakah. That's the proof. If we're talking about pikuach nefesh, sakana fashis, and this and that, and you can free, you can do anything in order to, why is it in Hilchos Tzedakah? Let it be in the laws of Shemirat HaNefesh or something of that sort. All money, that's what he says. So now, here. Umuzharin Bezdin Shalolikach Kofim and Arotzeach. Bezdin, and this is in Hilchus Rotzeach, murder, the laws of murder, and what you do to murderers. Bezdin Awan Shalolikach Kofim and Arotzeach. A murderer can never pay off, can ransom himself. You don't accept anything in place of the death penalty. A murderer is going to give all the money in the world. Even if the next of kin of the one who was killed is ready to say, I'm Michael, and you know, love, turn the other cheek, you know, God. Even if he's ready to let bygones be bygones. You know why? Listen to the Rambam. She'ein nafsho shel zeh ha-nehrag, the life of the one who was killed is not kinyan goel hadam. It doesn't belong to the Redeemer. That dead man's life doesn't belong to you or to you or to anybody. You know who his life belongs to? God. And God says, you can't ransom that for anything in the world. I can imagine in 1956, Menachem Begin standing in the center of Yerushalayim, Lo tikhu kofer lenefesh rotzeach. He came out then against the reparations from Germany. They're going to buy their way out. Can't do that. Rafilu rotzeach. A man's life belongs to God, and you took that life. Now listen to the Rambam is making very broad statements. There is nothing about which the Torah was so serious about, like the spilling of blood. Don't make the land guilty with the blood that has been spilled in it. Because the blood of murdered people causes guilt to the land. So one of the priests says, how can you let murderers go free? How can you let murderers go free? There's nothing about which Torah has been so serious about killers. Barguti? Yemach Shemayim, is it right? We should let him out? And all the rest of them? Maybe the fellows who killed the Chavam Ze'evi should also be left? Or people who killed the Chaim from someplace, or Yankel from someplace, or Sarah or Rivka. How do you let them go? Right? Those are some of the dilemmas. We're not finished. It means like this. If anybody, people can get emotional over here, so you have to know that for every emotion that one is going to express, there's an opposite emotion. Can you look Gilad Shalit's parents in the face? You have to let them go. I saw that. I saw that written. So then I ask, can you look the families of those who lost their loved ones by these Meshuggah Nebatzim, can you look them in the face? We will be able to look into the faces of those who are wondering if some who may lose their lives as a result of the fact that these people are going to be free. It's a multifaceted dilemma. I don't want to be asked the question. I don't have an answer. Yitzhak Shem Hen Sheikh Yavo.